Kipps by H.G. Wells, dramatized by Micheline Wanda, music by Ilona Sekach, with Mark Straker as Kipps, Catherine Halbert as Helen, John Hollis as Kipps' uncle, and Paul Daneman as H.G. Wells, the storyteller. Episode 3, Kipps Gets Engaged.
Arthur Kipps, once a draper by trade, has come into a fortune. Living now in a large house in Folkestone, with a housekeeper and maids, mind, he's been worrying that education and learning have passed him by. In particular, he is rather anxious to be able to do the right thing when he calls on... Kipps has learnt that refined persons call on other refined persons. When he calls on a Miss Helen Walsingham, a teacher of wood carving, whose careful pre-Raphaelite beauty has caught his heart. As someone who takes a close interest in the young man's welfare, I am a little concerned that this infatuation has quite put out of his mind Anne Pornick, the girl next door, and his childhood sweetheart. Still, Anne has gone into service somewhere, and Kipps is ignorant of her whereabouts, so I shall not judge too harshly. My name, by the way, is H.G. Wells. I am what Mr. Kipps would call a norther. At this moment, Kipps is about to make a call on a Mr. Chester Coote, a young gentleman who is easing him into the ways of etiquette. You look very smart today, Mr. Kipps.
Oh, hello, Mr. Wells. Do I really? Tell very much.
A very smart silk cravat, if I may say so. Puce, is it?
It was clean when I put it on.
No, I mean the colour.
Sort of red, I reckon.
Never mind. Now, are you very clear about what you must do upon calling?
Knock on the door.
No, I mean, should there be no one at home, you will have to leave a card.
Card? You mean... Yeah, I've got a pack of cards at home. But why should I want to leave playing cards?
A calling card. A card with your name on it. With your compliments.
Oh, law.
Oh, dear.
What am I going to do?
Well, it seems a shame to waste your cravat on the world should you decide to turn back. Let's see it first if anyone is at home. Fortunately, we're nearly there.
Yeah, but we're right outside it.
Yeah. Well done. Off you go.
Do I knock double or single?
Neither. There's a bell.
Right.
Yes, sir?
Mr. Kipps, calling on Mr. Chester Coote.
Very well, sir. Would you care to come in?
Don't mind if I do.
Just a moment, sir.
Yes, of course.
Kipps, look. You can see into the drawing room. A black and gold piano, a glazed bookcase, a Moorish cosy corner. On the mantelshelf, a number of cards of invitation to meetings and recitals.
Yeah, Mr. Wells, what's that?
That's a bust of Beethoven.
Just look at all them pictures.
Probably done by Miss Coote.
Oh, yes. His sister what paints?
Who?
What?
His sister who paints?
That's what I just said. Shh, Mr. Wells. Right.
Mr. Kipps, how very kind of you to call. I'm Chester's sister. How do you do?
How do you do, Miss Coote?
I'm afraid Chester has just gone down to the art school to see about some drawing or other. He'll be back soon. Will you wait?
I don't mind if I do. I've been looking at your paintings.
Do you paint?
Not really. Where are all these views of?
Well, this one is of the cliffs, done from the seafront.
No, I would never have recognised them. Isn't it funny how things look in a picture?
Oh.
Oh, but they're awfully good.
Thank you, Mr. Kipps.
I wish I could paint.
That's what Chester says, but I tell him he's got better things to do. Ah, Chester. I was just entertaining Mr. Kipps with an account of my painting.
Bravo.
Glad to see you, my dear chap.
Well, I'll just go and see about tea, if you'll excuse me.
What capital timing, my dear chap. Come into my study. It's rather cosy in there.
Coote's study was a little bedroom put to studious uses. Over the mantel he had an array of things he had been led to believe indicative of culture and refinement. A Swiss-carved pipe with many joints, a phrenological bust, a picture of Watts painting Minotaur. A table under the window bore a little microscope, some dust in a saucer, some grimy glass slips and broken cover glasses, for Coote had gone in for biology a little. The longer side of the room was given over to bookshelves, neatly edged with pinked American cloth, and with an array of books.
Lord, what a lot of books you've got.
Oh, yes.
Here, why have you got lots of copies of the same book?
That, my dear fellow, is the Encyclopaedia Britannica.
Ah.
Then there's Tennyson, Charles Kingsley, Rossetti, some H.G. Wells, modern writer. And this is a photograph of Amiens Cathedral. Nothing enlarges the mind like travel and books.
Well, I've often wanted to have a good go in at reading.
Well, so long as you avoid trashy reading, you ought to make it a rule, Kipps, to read one serious book a week. Of course, we can learn from novels, nace novels, that is, but it isn't the same as a serious book. Here's one such. Pond Life by Mrs. Tadletome.
Oh, they look very difficult.
Not really. Ah, this will interest you. Manners and Rules of Good Society. Here.
Oh, by a member of the aristocracy, I'll say.
Borrow it, my dear chap.
May I really?
Of course.
What's that?
That'll be tea.
Oh.
Come along.
Ah, there you both are. And look who else has called. Helen.
Oh. Here was Helen Walsingham, solid and real. The easy flow of the dark hair back from her brow, over her ears, the shapeliness of the white hands that came out from her simple cuffs, the delicate penciling of her brow.
Oh, dear. Mr. Wells, what shall I do?
Just relax and be yourself, Kipps.
Right-o. Good afternoon, Miss Walsingham.
Well done.
Mr. Kipps, what a very pleasant surprise. Are you back in Folkestone with us?
Just here on a bit of business. Oh. I thought you was on holiday in Bruges.
Tea with milk, Mr. Kipps.
Tough, thanks.
My mother and I decided to wait until my brother takes his holidays. Solicitors are such busy chaps. And he's qualified now, you know.
Oh.
Very important. We shall go to Bruges when he is free to accompany us. Now, where are you staying in Folkestone?
Oh, actually, I've got a house of my own. It's called Hughenden.
Oh, but of course. I heard all about your good fortune from Miss Coote. Sugar, Mr. Kipps?
I don't mind, just as you like.
Some bread and butter?
I am a bit hungry. Just a slice, thanks. Don't I get a plate for the bread, Mr. Wells?
No, you have to balance it on the edge of your saucer.
When are we going to sit round the table?
This is a migratory method of taking tea, to which you will have to become accustomed.
Oof! Careful! Oh, sorry. I seem to have dropped me bread.
Oh.
It's all right. I don't mind eating off the floor.
Did you go to the concert last night, Helen?
Oh, yes, a divine rendition of the Moonlight Sonata, I thought, quite heavenly.
More bread, Kipps?
No, best not.
I do hope you will all come to the next concert.
Who's giving it?
Paderewski.
Oh.
It should be superb, quite superb. I recall a concert he gave somewhere in London, so exciting.
Mr. Kipps, now that you have altered your station, shall you remain here in Folkestone with us?
I don't really know yet. I've got an uncle and aunt in New Romney. I might go back there for a bit. I just don't know yet.
Well, I expect the world is now your oyster.
My what?
You will be able to go anywhere you like.
Paris.
Florence.
There's a girl called Flo, works at the Draper's Emporium, where I was before I come into my money. Well, I could visit her.
Why, New York, Eve?
I thought of popping over to Bologna, just for a look round.
At any rate, if you stay in dull old Folkestone with us, you must go to the next recital.
Oh, yes.
I'm sure you will enjoy it.
If you do, well, I dare say I shall. I don't know much about music, but I do know what I like. I've got a banjo.
Oh. And you must very definitely call on Mother and me before we depart for Bruges.
Oh, rather.
That would be delightful. Miss Coote, may I borrow that drawing board from you?
But of course. It's in my studio.
Thank you. Goodbye, then.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Miss Walsingham.
Don't forget to call.
Well, I'd best be off and all.
Hold on a moment. I've got another book to lend you. Ruskin's Sesame and Lilies.
Is that about food?
It's about art, my dear chap.
Oh, tough.
And be sure you read Manners and Rules of Good Society very carefully.
Oh, thanks, Coote. You're a real friend.
Next time I'll let you have a book on vitality that you might find helpful.
On his way home, Kipps began to wonder about the precise effect of his behaviour at tea on Miss Walsingham. By the time he arrived, he was full of anxiety that he might have offended or otherwise upset her. Once in the privacy of his study, he took out the book which Chester Coote had lent him.
Here we are. Manners and Rules of Good Society.
A cheap, magnificent cover of red and gold.
21st edition, whatever that means.
Go on, then.
What?
Read it. Turn over the page. Now, start there. Those individuals who have led secluded or isolated lives, or have hitherto lived and moved in other spheres than those wherein well-bred people move, will gather all the information necessary from these pages to render them thoroughly conversant with the manners and amenities of society.
Is that all one sentence?
Now, go on. The Art of Conversing. Go on, you read it.
Having thus acquired possession of an idea, the little ship should not be abruptly launched into deep waters, but should first be permitted to glide gently and smoothly into the shallows. That is to say, the conversation should not be commenced by broadly or roundly stating a fact, or
didactically
expressing an opinion, as the subject would thus be virtually or summarily disposed of, or perhaps be met with a...
Really?
Or...
Indeed.
Or some equally brief monosyllabic reply. I don't think much of this.
Carry on.
If an opposite opinion were held by the person to whom the remark were addressed, he might not, if a stranger, care to express it in a form of a direct
contradiction
or actual dissent. To glide him
perceptibly
into the conversation is the object to be attained. I don't get a word of this.
Do you want to learn, or don't you?
Of course I do.
Then go back to the beginning and read it all through again.
Having thus acquired possession...
finally made his call on the Walsinghams, it happened rather differently from the prescriptions set down in Manners and Rules. So differently, indeed, that he was rather lost from the outset. Instead of the footman or maidservant, which the book had said was proper to these occasions, Miss Walsingham opened the door to him herself.
Mr. Kibbs, what a pleasant surprise.
I thought I'd call.
Oh, do come in. You won't think it unconventional of me to invite you in. Mother is out just at the moment.
I don't mind, if you don't mind.
The Walsingham dwelling struck Kipps as being smaller and rather less emphatically coloured than that of the Coots, and in which, at first, only a copper bowl of white poppies upon the brown tablecloth caught his attention.
I've told Mother all about you.
Oh.
She'll be delighted to meet you. Come into the drawing room.
I'm looking forward to meeting her.
Well, she's gone out to make some duty calls. I didn't go. I had something to write. I write a little, you know.
Really?
Oh, it's nothing much. One must do something. What do you think of our view, Mr. Kibbs? We look straight onto the square. It's pleasant in early spring, like bright green laid on with a dry brush. And it's very pleasant in autumn.
Well, I never thought of you like that. The colours in there. Yes, I like it.
Oh.
Is that your garden out there?
It's only a little garden. Are you interested in gardening?
Well, I grew a Penningworth of nastertions once in my uncle's dustbin.
We've just got that little patch of turf and my narcissi and yellow wallflowers.
It's nice.
It's small, but this is the day of small things.
Oh. If you were writing when I came in, I must be interrupting you.
Oh, no, I'd finished.
Were you making up something?
Well, I try quite vainly to write stories. One must do something. I don't know whether I shall ever be any good at it. It seems so hopeless. And, of course, one must study the popular taste. Yeah. Well, now my brother Henry has gone to London, I get a lot of leisure. He's luckier than I. He has a chance.
Is he a good solicitor?
Oh, excellent. He's frightfully clever. He's involved with so many people and ideas.
Oh.
No doubt he has a wonderfully busy life in London.
Well, you got your wood-carving classes and things.
They ought to satisfy me, but they don't. I suppose I'm ambitious, but I've never had much of a springboard.
Oh, I should think you could do anything you wanted.
As a matter of fact, I can't do anything I want to.
But you've done a great deal.
What have I done, Mr. Kibbs?
Well, Chester told me you passed one of these university things.
Oh, I matriculated.
Well, I should think I was no end of a swell if I did that. I know that for sure.
Mr. Kipps, do you have any idea how many people matriculate into London University every year?
I don't know.
Between 2,000 and 3,000.
Well, do you think how many don't?
Oh, they don't count.
Oh.
The fact is,
I'm a discontented person.
Folkestone is simply a seafront, and it values people by sheer vulgar prosperity. Now, Mother and I are not prosperous, and we live in a back street. I can tell you, it's a mercy we haven't had to let rooms. One simply feels one hasn't had opportunities.
Oh, I understand that, all right. That's just it. No, I believe you could do anything you wanted to, if you tried. I watched you when you were teaching in that wood carving class, and you got something.
Oh, it's very evident that you are one of those rare people who believe in me, Mr. Kipps.
Oh, I do, I do.
Oh, Valencia!
As Mrs. Walsingham appeared in the doorway, bonneted and ladylike, Kipps felt a certain apprehension. At first sight, she appeared rather jaded and haughty. But then she held out her hand. He took it, and she responded to his touch with a friendly pressure. He felt a little less apprehensive. Just a little less apprehensive.
Ah! There you are.
Mother, look who has come to call on us. Mr. Kipps.
How very, very kind of you, Mr. Kipps. New people rarely call on us nowadays. How do you do?
How do you do?
Have you had tea yet?
Not yet, Mother. I'll go and see to it. It was nearly ready when Mr. Kipps called. I'm sure you can entertain each other.
I say, don't trouble my account.
No trouble. I'm thirsty on my own account.
Weren't you one of Helen's pupils?
Yes. That's how I had the pleasure of meeting her.
She takes great pleasure in that wood-carving class. She is so energetic and it gives her an outlet.
Oh, I think she teaches something splendid.
Everyone thinks she does very well. Helen, I think, would do anything well she undertook to do. She is so very clever. She throws herself into things. Do you know, she told me all about your poor cut hand when you would open the window for her.
Fancy her telling you that.
Oh, she tells me everything. She told me how brave you were. She said you didn't seem to feel the cut a bit, even though it was bleeding terribly.
Oh, it was nothing.
Oh.
Here we are, then. Oh, lovely.
Mr. Kipps? Would you mind pulling out the table for tea?
Well, I don't mind if I do.
Thank you.
There.
Now.
Milk and sugar, Mr. Kipps?
Yes, please. Oh, he looks lovely, I must say.
There we are.
This time, Kipps took no bread and butter and managed his teacup creditably. Then he began talking. He talked quite modestly and simply about his changed condition, about his inherited fortune, his early apprenticeship as a draper, his aunt and uncle in New Romney. He confided, he submitted, and he remained for about 2 hours, having forgotten how terribly incorrect it is to stay such a length of time. Fortunately, Miss Walsingham and her mother did not seem to mind at all. Within 2 months, a mere 53 days, Kipps had clambered to the battlements of his heart's desire. It all became finally possible when the Walsinghams decided not to go to Bruges for their holidays, but to stay in Folkestone. One day there was a water party organised by Chester on the nearby canal. Kipps had learned to paddle when he was a boy, and it has to be said that Kipps did not paddle at all badly. The trip was to culminate in a visit to the local castle. Kipps removed his jacket and rolled up his sleeves to take charge of the boat he shared with Miss Walsingham. Muscles hardened by lifting pieces of cretonne in his former place of work gave him a perfectly respectable figure. Also in the party were Chester Coote, Mrs. Walsingham, and Helen's brother, the young successful solicitor down for the weekend from London.
Oh,
here we are, everyone. Row to the bank, Kipps.
Right, okay, old chap. How you jump, Henry? Now, catch hold of this.
Yes, of course.
There we are, then.
Oh, what fun. Help me out of the boat, Mr. Kipps.
Certainly. Take my hand, Miss Walsingham.
Yes.
There we are.
Oh, thank you so much.
Mrs. Walsingham.
Thank you, Mr. Kipps. Oh, there's the castle over there.
Now then, young Henry, you can take your mother onto the castle. We'll follow the long way round across the field. I say, that's a rather fearsome-looking beast.
Oh, dear. Just look at that brute.
It's all right, Mama. I shall merely wave my hat at it. Like so. Avaunt, you silly creature!
Fortune had favoured Kipps by placing a small convenient field entirely at the disposal of an adolescent bull. The field was adjacent to the landing place and was directly between the boating party and the castle.
I shan't walk past that.
Never fear, I shall protect you all.
There, Toreador, Matador, Picador.
Oh dear, it is rather large.
He's only a little bull.
I shan't walk past
it. Mother, don't fuss.
Mrs. Worsingham, may I escort you round by the park?
A topping notion.
Mr. Coote, how kind.
Come on, Mater, we'll leave this stupid animal to get on with its dinner.
You are making a fuss about nothing.
Come along, then.
Will you be all right, Helen?
Of course I will. Mr. Kipps is going to escort me. Aren't you, Mr. Kipps? Goodbye, dear.
Bye.
See you all at the castle.
See you, bye.
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 Oh, isn't he sweet?
Hello, old chap.
Perhaps he's not that sweet.
Oh, he's only a little one. Come on, I'll help you over the stile. Come on. There we are.
Are you sure?
Of course I'm sure.
Well, come on. Well, if you say so, Mr. Kipps.
There's a good fellow. Easy does it.
It was not an affair of the bull ring, exactly. No desperate rushings and gorings, but the bull came resolutely towards them.
Oh, Mr. Kipps.
He regarded them with a large, wicked, bluish eye, opened a mouth below his moist, glistening nose, and booed and shook his head and showed that tossing was in his mind.
Oh, he looks awfully fierce.
Just stay very calm, and we'll get to the gate. That's the ticket. That's fine. Come on. Now, look here, you bull. You just mind your manners and be off. Yeah, that's more like it. Go on, Miss Walsingham, open the gate. He won't harm you. Oh, stand guard. If necessary, I'll have another word with him. There now. And you behave yourself next time you see a lady.
Oh, Mr. Kipps, how brave. How very brave you are. Thank you.
He was nothing.
The company had planned to climb the castle keep and survey the low blue hills by Winchelsea and Hastings. To the east hung France, between the sea and the sky, and round to the north, bounding the wide perspective of farms and houses and woods, were the downs, with their chalk pits sustaining the passing shadows of the sailing cloud.
Oh, isn't it absolutely marvellous? Oh, come on, let's get to the top.
I don't think I can climb any more of these horrid little steps.
Oh. Well, all this fresh air is making me feel quite faint. I must have a cigarette. Come on, Coote, let's toddle down to the village.
Right,
coming, Mama.
I shall sit on this stone. I've done quite enough toddling for today.
Oh, come on then, Mr. Kipps. Let's go right up to the top.
Right-o.
Glorious, quite glorious. Oh, isn't it quite glorious, Mr. Kipps?
Oh, yes. I've always been very fond of scenery. My, there is a lot of scenery up here, isn't there?
One feels one owns things standing up here.
Miss Walsingham, I've been thinking.
About what?
About names.
Names? What sort of names?
Well, Coote was saying to me a while ago that perhaps my real name isn't spelt K-I-P-P-S, but C-U-Y-P-S. I'm not too sure about it.
Well, it's an interesting proposition.
I don't know. I was just thinking.
Kipps had intended to lead from this question to the general question of surnames and changes of names. It had seemed a light and witty way of approaching what he had in mind, a proposition of a marital nature. He decided to try another approach.
When I see scenery and things like that, things that are beautiful, it makes me feel...
What?
Silly-like.
Oh, you needn't. You know, Mr. Kipps, you hold yourself too cheap.
You mean you don't hold me cheap?
Oh, no.
But, for instance, you don't think of me as an equal, right?
Why ever not?
Oh, but really, if I thought... Well, you know so much.
Oh, that's all nothing.
I know what I am. Mm. If I thought it was possible, if I thought that you... I believe I could do anything. Miss Walsingham, is it possible that you... could care for me enough to help me. Miss Walsingham, do you care for me at all?
I think you're the most generous, the most kind, most modest of men. And this afternoon, I thought you were the bravest. Oh, there's Mother. She's signalling. We have to go down.
Yes, but you must know, Miss Walsingham. You must tell me.
What?
If you care for me.
It was as if everything in the world was drawn to the breaking point, and in a minute must certainly break.
Yes, I do know. Promise me something, Arthur.
Promise you what?
If I do not hold you cheap, you will never hold yourself cheap.
If you do not hold me cheap? You mean...
Yes, I hold you dear.
Or me?
Yes, of course. Who else?
I mean, will you... Would you... marry me, Helen?
Oh, but of course, you silly... What else could I mean? Yes, yes, yes.
Kipps felt as a praying hermit might have felt, snatched from the midst of his quiet devotions, his modest sackcloth and ashes, and hurled neck and crop over the glittering gates of paradise, smack among the iridescent wings, the bright-eyed cherubim. He felt like some lowly and righteous man dynamiting into bliss. His hand tightened on the rope that steadies one upon the stairs of stone. He was for kissing her hand, and did not. He said not a word more. He turned about, and with something very like a scared expression on his face, led the way into the obscurity of their descent. Was spread on a white cloth under the trees. Kipps handed the wrong things to the wrong people and killed wasps as if he were in a dream. Helen was carefully not looking at him, but he knew that the goddess had come from her altar and had taken him by the hand.
I say, Kipps, old man, snap out of it. Pass the sandwiches.
Oh, perhaps in olden times they jousted here on the grass.
These castles are such melancholy places. But I feel quite cheerful here with my children and our good friends.
Oh, Mother.
Do you know, Mr. Kipps, Henry's very like Helen. They're both so quick, so artistic, so full of ideas. Do you know, even when Helen was a little girl, she wrote verse.
Well, I don't bother with versifying in London. It's just more and more clients.
Henry is taking on more clients to solicit for every day.
I don't think that's quite the right word, Mother.
But I am looking for clients, that is true. How about you, Mr. Kipps? Need a solicitor?
Well, I've got one. Watson and Bean. Old Bean, in fact. But he's a bit of an old cove.
I'll say. An old has-been.
I must say, I wouldn't mind someone a bit nearer my own sort of age.
Done, Mr. Kipps. I can tell you're an honest man. I would be delighted to take you on.
You know, Mr. Kipps, there are bright days and dark days. And mine have not always been bright. Until today.
I know just what you mean, Mrs. Walsingham.
As the afternoon continued, Helen now and then threw a private glance across at Kipps. When they all went home, the sky was a vast splendour, and close to them were the dark, protecting trees and the shining, smooth, still water. Behind Kipps was money and opportunity, freedom. He was indeed at his heart's desire. The following day, Chester called on Kipps.
Come in.
My dear chap, Mary let me in. I said, why are you sitting alone here in the dark?
Oh, I didn't notice. I was thinking.
And I bet I know what about, or rather, about whom.
Do you?
Oh, yes. She's splendid, isn't she?
Oh, yes.
Congratulations, my dear chap. I couldn't help noticing the radiance on her face at the picnic.
Did you?
Oh, yes. My dear Kipps, this is better than a legacy.
Oh, I don't deserve it.
You can't say that. And you say it all began before your money?
Oh, yes, when I was in her class.
It's a county family, you know. She's connected with the Beaupré family. You know Lord Beaupré?
Don't believe I do.
Distantly related, of course. Still.
Oh, it's all too much. Coop, what should I do now?
Well,
You'll have to call, of course. You must speak to Mrs. Walsingham. Tell her you mean to marry her daughter.
Oh, I dare say Ellen's told her by now. Or she's guessed. She ain't stupid.
That's not the point. The point is you must tell her. Ask her permission.
Oh, I see. Then there's the ring. What must I do about that?
Oh, yes. Of course, you must buy a tasteful engagement ring. Go to the shop and ask them. They'll show you some rings.
And then what? Do I take it to her?
No. Send it. Much better.
And this call on Mrs. W. How one ought to be dressed?
Rather a ceremonial occasion, I think.
What, like a frock coat?
I think so.
Like trousers and all that?
Yes.
How about a rose?
I think you might run to a buttonhole. And, of course, when you see her, you'll have to ask her to name the day.
Oh, there's no hurry.
Oh, but there's no reason to delay.
A year, say?
A year's rather a long time.
Is it? I'll have to think it over. I say, Coot.
Yes?
What's a tat-a-tate?
Ah, you mean a tete-a-tete? That's a conversation alone together.
Well, he said in his book you borrowed me that strictly we oughtn't enjoy a tete-a-tete. Not sit together, walk together, ride together, or meet during any part of the day. Well, that doesn't leave us much time to talk, does it?
The book says that.
I read it before you came, but I thought it was a bit rum.
Well, let me see. You won't find Miss Walsingham as strict as all that. They'd only do that in old aristocratic families. The Walsinghams are fairly modern, advanced, you might say. I expect you'll get plenty of chance to talk.
There's a tremendous lot to think about. I suppose I'd better go over and tell my uncle and aunt about it all.
But Kipps soon became caught up in other preoccupations, and the idea of telling his aunt and uncle receded into the background. He had to call on Mrs. Walsingham. He had listened to his friend Coote, and for the occasion, his trousers were a dark grey. He wore a deep-skirted frock coat, patent leather boots, and he carried a silk hat. He had generous white cuffs with gold links, and his grey gloves, one thumb of which had burst when he put them on, were held loosely in his hand. His small umbrella was rolled to an exquisite tightness. The world smelt of his rosebud.
I am delighted, Mr. Kipps. This is a great thing to a mother. A daughter is so much more than a son. Marriage is a lottery, and without love and toleration, well... And my son is delighted that he's handling your affairs.
Oh, there wasn't anything.
They're both so clever. I call them my twin jewels. Oh, that'll be Helen. I'm sure you'll want to talk to one another alone. You young people mustn't be shy of one another.
Hello, Mother. Oh, why, Arthur.
Hello, Helen.
I'll leave you. Have you been speaking to Mother?
Oh, yes, we didn't sit in silence.
Anything about us?
Oh, that. Yes.
Oh, Arthur.
Oh, I don't know, Helen.
What is it, Arthur?
Everything's changed.
What?
I feel like someone else. Look, I don't know things. I'm not refined. The more you see of me, the more you'll find me out.
But I'm going to help you.
You'll have to help me a fearful lot.
Then I'll help you a fearful lot. Arthur, if you don't mind, if you will let me tell you things...
I wish you would.
Then I will. For instance, sometimes you're a little careless with your pronunciation.
Oh, I know. You mean H's. I know about them. I know Chep, Nectar... He's told me all about H's and that. Of course, on the stage, they've got to look out. They take regular lessons.
It only requires a little care.
Well, I dare say I shall soon get into it.
And then this dress. You don't mind?
Oh, no.
Well, you mustn't be too dressy. It's possible to be over-conventional, over-elaborate. It makes you look like a shop assistant. Well, like a common well-off person. There's a sort of easiness that is better. A real gentleman looks right without looking as though he'd tried to be right.
Well, just as though he put on what come first?
Not exactly that, but a sort of ease.
I see.
And you must accustom yourself to be more at your ease when you're with people.
You mean not played with fringes on this cushion?
That sort of thing, yes.
I'll try. I'll really do my best.
Oh, I know you will.
One has to learn.
Exactly, Arthur. One has to learn.
Kipps walked home, sober and thoughtful.
Mr. Kipps?
What? Oh, it's you, Mr. Wells.
Kipps, you forgot something. You forgot to get Helen to name the day.
Oh, well, I've got to leave something to talk about next time, haven't I?
So you have. And there's something else.
What else?
When are you going to tell your aunt and uncle about your engagement? They'll have to know. It's only fair.
Oh, stop nagging at me. I've got a lot on my mind.
But you must really...
All right. I'll go tomorrow. Satisfied? Now, just leave me alone for a bit.
The following day, Kipps dressed with a certain quiet severity and meditated over his kipper and bacon. Then, after an early cold lunch, he proceeded to hire a motor car and a driver. He purchased a cap and coat, and thus equipped, he entered the motor car to drive to New Romney to visit his aunt and uncle.
Oh, my man, this toy shop just here.
Right, sir.
I say, make the thing out a bit, will you? That's it, go on. That's it.
Rabbit. Who the dickens is making that unholy row outside my shop? Here. Is that you, Artie?
It is. Hello, Uncle. Thank you, driver. You take yourself off for an hour and then come back and get me.
Thank you, sir.
Rabbit. Artie. What is it? Thing like that cost.
Oh, I ain't bought it, Uncle. Just hide it.
You want to be careful. They ain't no further than experiments, them cars. You could get took in by them. They won't last, you know. Come on, come in the shop.
Right.
Hey, Molly, look who's turned up.
Why, Artie. Oh, what a surprise. Here, come and sit down. I've just brewed a cup of tea.
Here, Uncle, how'd you like that whiskey I sent you?
Well, me boy, I haven't the slightest doubt it's very good whiskey and cost you a tidy price, but dashed if it suits me. It catches me just here in the chest. Heartburn.
It's what all the actor manager chaps drink in London. Oh. I happen to know that for a fact.
I dare say those actor chaps might, but then they've already had their livers burnt out. My stomach's always been a bit delicate, but I'll tell you, I like them cigars. You can send me more of them if you like.
Easy done.
Here, to you. There you
are. Tom.
Thank you, Molly.
Here, have you two ever thought of moving?
Hmm? Moving?
Moving from here. I could provide for you, you know, and then you could retire from business. I could buy you a little cottage somewhere with flowers all round the door.
Oh, yeah. Well, we don't want to move in a hurry.
As and when we move, we want to be sure about it.
Well, we've been here for so long, we could be here for a bit longer.
You let me look about a bit first.
Yeah, but if we have a large house, we should want a servant, and yeah. I don't want no girls in the place laughing and sniggering and going all la-di-da.
No. Well, you needn't have a large house.
Yeah, but if we have a smaller house, we won't be able to swing a cat.
Oh, you ain't got no cat.
And then there's the stock. I don't want to sell it all off for nothing. Took years to accumulate. I mean, it might take years and years to sell. Yeah. There's some people come in and look round and go away without buying anything.
Yeah, right, well, you know.
Well, you think about it.
Oh, anyway, tell us what you've been doing with yourself these days.
Yeah, we must come over and visit you one of these days, eh, Molly?
Of course.
Well, I've got something. Well, you
see, the way I look at it, Artie, is when you know a place, you know a place. And I know this place, you know what I mean?
What's that?
Well, that's church bells, Artie. Ringing out someone's wedding being Saturday. You haven't forgotten the church bells.
No. No, of course not. Look, I'm off for a bit of a stroll, just to look at the old places.
Does this remind you of being young?
Oh, yes, Mr. Wells. Playing by the church, chatting to...
To whom, Kipps?
Oh, nothing, nobody.
You're not thinking of young Anne Pornick by any chance?
No, I ain't. She belongs in the past.
Here's someone else from the past.
For sake. Artie? Aunt Kipps?
Well, I never. Old Sid Pornick. I ain't seen you since I was 14. How are you, me old mate? I was just this very moment wondering if I'd ever see you again.
Oh, I turn up, mate. How are you, old chap?
All right. Actually, I've
been... You aren't changed much.
Aren't I?
I knew directly I saw you. Even with all that funny hat and coat on.
Yeah, you got me stars.
I have.
You're having your holidays?
Well, partly, but actually
I'm taking a bit of holiday. The fact is, I have to give myself holidays these days. I've set up on myself, you know.
What, down here?
Oh, no fear, I'm not a turnip. I've started up in Hammersmith. Manufacturing.
Drapery?
No, engineer. I manufacture bicycles.
Bicycles? Well, I'm learning to ride a bicycle.
Oh, well, I've got just the thing for you.
Yeah.
Here, have a handbill.
Oh,
that's my mate there.
Yeah.
It's called the Red Flag. I've got a transfer with me name on it. Best machine at a democratic price in London.
Yeah.
No guineas, no discounts. Honest trade. I'll build them to order.
Really?
I've made 17 so far. I'll come down here to visit Mother now and again. You married, Kipps?
Well, no, not yet.
Oh, I am. Married these 2 years.
No.
Got a nipper. Proper little chap he is.
Of course. Actually, I got engaged day before yesterday.
Oh, who's the fortunate lady?
Solicitor's daughter, in Folkestone. Oh. Rather a nice set. Related to the Earl of Beaupray.
Oh.
See, I've had a bit of luck, Sid. Been less some money.
Have you? How much?
£1,200 a year.
£1,200? Well, I never.
My grandfather it was. Hardly knew I had a grandfather.
£1,200 a year.
Approximately.
Well, that's a blooming stroke of luck. I'm glad for you. Better you than me, though. I don't envy you. I couldn't keep it if I did have it.
Why not?
I'm a socialist, you see. I don't hold with wealth. What is wealth? Labour robbed out of the poor.
I don't get it.
But when you look at it rationally, the present distribution of wealth is damn foolishness. Here, you have a job, you Kipps, and you get paid hardly anything. Then suddenly you get £1,200 a year.
Yeah?
Oh, it's not your fault, old chap. It's the system. Still, better you than most people, eh? Here, you'll be a swell, Kipps.
Oh, I shan't.
You can't have money like that and not swell out. You'll soon be too big to speak to a mere mechanic.
Oh,
like
I ain't that sort, Sid. You know me.
Money will be too much for you. And besides, you're caught by a swell already. The girl you're going to marry.
Oh, you don't know her. She's not like that at all.
Hey, Kipps, old chap, fancy you being rich. Here, do you remember this? What? 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 What?
The original Hero War Cry.
Even remember that old wreck on the beach that we used to play in?
Oh, no. Here, Sid, how's your sister Anne?
Oh, she's all right, I expect.
Where is she?
In a place. Ashford, actually. The fact is, we ain't been getting on too well.
Mm?
I don't hold with service. We're common people, I suppose. I just don't like it. I don't see why a sister of mine should wait at other people's tables. No.
I raced her once. She didn't run bad for a girl.
I wonder what you'll do with all that money.
Well, what would you do?
Well, now, it's no good giving it to the state. I might start an overnight profit-sharing factory, perhaps, or a socialist paper. We need a new socialist paper.
Oh, dear. I'd best be getting back. I had a motor car for the afternoon. It'll be waiting for me.
How much it cost you?
£5.
£5? Keep five families for a week?
Well, come and have a look at it, at any rate.
Oh, well, I don't mind if I do. Just before I catch the train back. How fast can it go?
Oh. Looks good enough. Here's your coat, Artie.
Oh, and your goggles.
Hi. Real fur, is it?
Of course. He gets very nippy sitting with the wind whistling past you.
You don't need all this gear on a bicycle.
But you've got to work on a bicycle.
It keeps your mind occupied, that does. Oh, I must say, the motor's not bad. I wouldn't mind having a look at this motor in my workshop.
On my word, Artie, I've a good mind to come with you.
Do you want to come for a ride, then?
No. No, it's too late, Artie. Some other time.
Right then. Well, I'll be off. Goodbye then.
Bye then.
Bye now. Take care.
Right then.
Bye.
See
you.
Oh, for sake.
Now then, Sid Pornick, if you could get to own something like that little machine, then you'd have something to talk about.
I'll do a lot better than that before I'm done, Mr. Kipps.
Ah, not you. How many bicycles is it you made?
17.
Oh, that's very good.
Don't make near as much noise as one of the other things. You've got a long way to go, Sid Pornick.
Oh, well. I'll best be off to see me mother. Say goodbye.
Give her me best, Sid.
Righto. Goodbye.
I told you, Molly, didn't I? Them Pornicks would never amount to much.
Show a bit of charity, eh?
Only if you've got some tea left. Come on.
Yeah, get away.
As he was being driven back to Folkestone, Kipps remembered a sudden glimpse of Anne Pornick, as she had been when he told her how lovers gave each other tokens. And the memory was so strong, so bright, that it seemed to breathe before him.
Hey, I've got this idea. I read in the magazine, Titbits, actually, that lovers give each other tokens.
What's a token?
Well, you take something and divide it in two. Like you might take sixpence and break it in two.
Why should you do that? It's no good if it's broke.
And you divide it in two and then you keep one bit each. Well, that's what a token is.
Why on earth didn't you tell your uncle and aunt?
But tell them what, Mr. Wells?
About your engagement, of course.
Oh, I don't know. I just somehow didn't.
Ah, have you had your first inkling of certain incompatibilities lying about the course of true love?
You what?
Well, let's put it this way. Being engaged to Helen is sane and excellent in Folkestone, but might be regarded with suspicion in New Romney.
Well, I don't know.
Getting cold feet?
Oh, no. But I'm really proud that someone like Helen likes me, because she does. She kissed me 3 times on the forehead the other day. I didn't kiss her, mind. But then, I didn't kiss Anne Pawney, neither.
Helen took Kipps in hand in perfectly good faith. She told him about his accent, his costume, his bearing, his way of looking at things. She found his simple willingness to listen a lovable thing. There was, it must be confessed, a touch of motherliness in her feelings towards him. Kipps' education continued without pause at home, out walking, and in cafes and restaurants.
No, really, Arthur, I don't think you should sing to the banjo.
But I like it. Anyway, Buggins said...
Who is Buggins?
Chap I used to work with in the shop.
What ho, Kipps!
Hello, Chitlow.
Thought it was you, old chap. Where the devil have you been hiding yourself?
Chitlow, this is Helen, Miss Walsingham.
How do you do, Mr...
Chitlow, my dear, at your service.
Oh.
Here, Kipps, your ear for just a moment about that play.
What play?
My play, what I wrote. You recall? Well, it's all right. There's a strong smell of syndicate in the air.
Oh, good, good.
You needn't tell anybody, but I think it's coming off. Must dash.
Right you are, then.
Goodbye, my dear.
Goodbye, Mr... Arthur, who was that?
That was Chitlow, sort of a friend of mine, running to me once on his bicycle and we got talking. He's an actor, Chip. Leastways, he writes plays.
What was all that about a syndicate?
Search me. He sells shares in his plays. Perhaps that's it.
Have you seen any of his plays?
Well, no. He hasn't actually had any on the stage yet. That's all coming. I bought a quarter share in his play for £100. It's a gold mine, he says.
Arthur, you must promise me something.
What?
Promise you won't do anything without consulting me. Like buying shares in plays and that sort of thing.
Well, in a sort of way, he did help me to my money. He pointed out the advertisement in the newspaper, telling me there was something to my advantage.
One can't know everybody you know. Which reminds me, I think we should do a little work on the elusive aspirate.
The what?
Your H's.
Oh, I've got a lot of difficulty with them, you know. Like with Ezzy. I should say, has he, shouldn't I? But what's the difference?
Well, has is a verb and as is a conjunctive.
I know that, but when he's has a conjunction and when he's is a verb.
Well, it's has when one means one has, meaning having. But if it isn't to do with having, then it's as. As, for example, one says he has. Oh, I mean, he has. But then one says, as he has.
Oh, I see. So I ought to say, has he?
No. If you're asking a question, you say, has he? I mean, has he? Oh, Lord.
Right. Now I've got it clear. Has he? Has he has? Yes, that's it.
Well, it does help if you remember about having.
I will. I will.
Miss Coote, sister of his good friend Chester, specialised in Kipps' artistic education.
Mr. Kipps, do look through this book of the 100 best paintings in the world.
Oh, say, that one's rather nice. That little thing there, that colour picture.
That's a print. A colour print.
Oh.
He was impressed by Mrs. Walsingham. Kipps was not a big man, but with Mrs. Walsingham, he always felt as though he had been rolled in clay, that his voice was strident. She did not so much teach him as tactfully guide and infect him.
Do you know, Mr. Kipps, I was in the omnibus the other day and a man passed my change to the conductor. He was quite a common little man, but I will say something for him. He lifted his hat.
Helen's brother's share in the educational syndicate was just as important.
You order hock for lunch and Sparky Moselle for dinner. And make sure you get these cigarettes with gold tips. Don't pay more than a penny a minute for a hansom cab. Don't talk like a fool on the train. Sit quiet and thoughtful. Oh, it will be jolly when you come up to London.
Bertie, when we move to London, we shall spell your name C-U-I-P-S. We shall be Mr. and Mrs. Kipps.
Oh.
Oh, you'll soon get used to it.
So in their several ways, they all contributed to enlarge and refine and exercise the intelligence of Kipps. And presiding over all these influences was Kipps' nearest friend, Chester Coote, a sort of master of ceremonies. One day, walking in the park, he launched into fulsome praise.
You're improving daily, Kipps, my dear fellow.
Thank you, cute old chap.
You're pretty well completely a gentleman now. You know, we took you up just in time. You'll soon get sans froid.
I hope so.
Next year, perhaps, if there's a good extension literature course, you should go in for that. Savoir faire is more than half the secret of sans froid.
Oh, yes,
you see, there are the big people and the modest, refined, gentlemanly people like me who may dabble in the professions. There are lords and there are gentlefolk who have to manage, but they can all call on one another. They constitute society. Of course, down here in Folkestone one doesn't see much of it, but there is still local society and that has the same rules.
My eye! Neville! Kipps! I say, Buggins, it's Kipps!
So it is. Hello there, Kipps.
Who on earth are they?
Buggins and Coleshaw, from the clothing emporium where I used to work before coming to me money.
That man is smoking a briar pipe. I'll leave them to you.
Evening, Kipps.
Hello, Coleshaw and Buggins.
You're a proper gentleman in them clothes. Enjoying it, are you?
It's all right. How about you?
Oh, holidays next week. Yeah. If you don't look out, I'll be on the cotton on before you, eh?
You going up to Bologna, then?
Rather. Parlez-vous, Francie.
Come along, Kipps, old chap.
Ooh, I say, Kipps, if you seen anything of her ladyship lately, she was along with Sir William in the shop and she asked to be remembered to you. Oh, Sir William suffers a lot from his gout, don't you know?
Come along, Kipps. We ought to be moving on.
Oh, sorry, sir. Didn't see you there. Got an appointment?
In a manner of speaking.
Oh, we should come along with you. Some company.
Partial.
We're late, Kipps.
Oh, well, we won't keep you, will we, Buggins?
Duh.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Did I flick some ash on your sleeve? How clumsy of me.
I don't think we're at all in need of your society, thank you very much. Come along, Kipps. I think that was the most awful chick.
I expect it was.
Charitable as one is, one must admit that there are people who do things, impossible things. These people must be cut. The cut in society is no joke. It's excommunication. It is so tragic that entire novels have been written about it. You will have to cultivate a certain distance. It's difficult, I admit, but you will have to lose certain old friends. The true gentleman, you see, Kipps, is patriotic. He lifts his hat to the national anthem. He does not talk of passion, finance, politics, birth and death.
I see.
Profundities. Get me? One does not talk, but on the other hand, one is punctilious to do. Remember this, Kipps.
I will.
The whole event in the park was an interesting little object lesson, and it stuck in the front of Kipps' mind for a long time. He was so preoccupied that when later that day he went to hear Helen playing Beethoven's sonatas, he forgot to say how perfectly lovely the music was. He felt as though he had struck Carshot and Buggins in the face, in circumstances that gave them no power to reply. He felt disturbed, uneasy. He loved Helen. He had entered society. But he could not quite forget Anne Pornick, Sid Pornick, Carshot, and Buggins, all his oldest friends. Perhaps one day he would.
Dainman played H.G. Wells, Mark Straker, Kipps, Catherine Hurlbut, Helen, and John Hollis, Uncle, in the third episode of Kipps by H.G. Wells, which has been dramatised in 5 episodes by Micheline Wonder. Kipps' aunt, Jane Wenham, Miss Coote, Helena Breck, Chester Coote, Christopher Good, Mrs. Walsingham, Penelope Lee, Henry, Spencer Banks, Sid, Michael Jenner, Anne, Moya Leslie, Carshot, Christopher Biggins, Buggins, John Webb, and Chitterlow, Nicholas Grace. The music was composed by Alona Sekanj. Kipps was directed by Martin Jenkins. Thank you.